Welcome back. You're listening to Graphite 94.9 FM in English Only with the Doctor. Today I prepared a particular treat that reminds me of my younger days during the Christmas season or just being with family, because with my family, when we were eating, often we would listen to a CBC radio story, kind of story broadcast called The Vinyl Cafe. Now, The Vinyl Cafe started in 1994 and it was launched by Stuart McLean, who passed away in 2017. And it was like a summer series featuring a whole bunch of different fictional stories that he had written about, and then eventually made into this one particular individual from one of his fictional stories, who ran a secondhand store, and it became a staple in our family life. My parents were huge fans of CBC Radio. Part of the reason they were fans is because it was a nonprofit. Another reason was because they had a really eclectic kind of musical influence on our household. And it also had French Canadian as well as not French Canadian music. So it was really great. And it also featured Canadian artists, which is probably what motivates me in doing this particular radio show on a regular basis. But Stuart McLean is one of my favorites. Now, we're going to start and end this program with a Stuart McLean story, two parts of a three-part story that you can find on YouTube if you Google Christmas at the Turlingtons. So Turlingtons is T-U-R-L-I-N-G-T-O-N, or you just look for Stuart McLean Vinyl Cafe. And this is Christmas at the Turlingtons, where Dave and Morley go to their neighbor's house for Christmas. And Christmas for many people, or even Thanksgiving, happy Thanksgiving to my friends from south of the border, the United States. They celebrate their Thanksgiving holiday today. And it's filled with lots of emotion and stress and preparation and excitement and beauty. And here we go. This is Christmas at the Turlingtons by Stuart McLean. Enjoy the story.
No one in God's great creation gives themselves over to Christmas more than Morley's neighbor, Mary Turlington. To the season and the spirit behind it, to be sure, but not only to the season and the spirit, to the whole nine yards, to all the noise that surrounds Christmas. "I've chosen my Christmas color," Mary announced triumphantly to her husband, Bert, one night in July. "I'm doing cinnamon this year." Notice it's not we're doing cinnamon. For Mary Turlington, Christmas is a solo sport. "We'll need a copper tree," she said to Bert a few days later. And catch that shift, an important distinction. Mary writes the score, but Mary expects her husband, Bert, to be in the band. By right of marriage, Bert is enlisted, inducted, and suited up. Mary, who's taken up with and over by Christmas every year, became particularly focused on this Christmas some 6 weeks ago. Until 6 weeks ago, Mary believed that her mother and her sister and her sister's husband and their four children and her brother and his kids were all coming to her house for Christmas. But one by one, her family bailed. Her brother got a new job and couldn't afford the time away. Her sister's husband got sick. Her mother called and said, I don't know. If no one else is coming, maybe I should stay at home. Anyone else might have been disappointed. Anyone else so caught up in Christmas preparations might have fallen apart. What's the point, they might have asked. I work so darn hard, no one cares. Mary didn't fall apart. Mary dug deeper. "Means we can do things my way for a change," she said to Bert. Apparently, Mary, who had been all about control, had also been all about compromise. "I thought I was going to have to do a turkey again this year," said Mary. "Emma's so conservative on the question of turkey." On the question of turkey at Christmas, Bert felt pretty conservative himself. But he was conservative enough not to admit it. Instead of being unsettled that her plans were unraveling, Mary was becoming unleashed. She was Mary Unshackled. "What do you think of henna?" she said to Bert one night. "Who?" said Bert. "If we hennaed your hair," said Mary. think of how nice you'd go with a copper tree. Mary had apparently shifted into some previously undiscovered Christmas gear. And Bert, who had always been delighted by his wife's Christmas cheer, was beginning to feel something that was not delight. It was a bigger feeling than delight, a worrying sort of feeling, fear. Bert was fearful that Mary's Christmas was about to overtake him. He felt like the Cadillac in that song about the little Nash Rambler. Beep, beep, said Bert. What, said Mary? Oh, nothing, said Bert. As Christmas got closer, Mary set out their collection of Christmas candles. A parade of little paraffin men and women in chipped red and yellow choir robes. I know they're cheesy, she said, but I love these things more than anything. The candles had been in Mary's family since before she was born. Mary's parents had bought the choir master and his wife on their very first Christmas together. A man and a woman singing their little paraffin hearts out. Mary's mother had added to the candle collection each time she had a child. And when her children married, she added wax figures for each husband and wife, and then for each of the grandchildren. After 50 Christmases, there were now 23 candles that lived 11 months of the year wrapped in tissue at the bottom of a shoebox and spent the holiday season marching along the mantle, the two original candles at the head of the paraffin parade. Only one candle had ever been lit when Mary's sister's husband left her for his aerobics instructor. Mary's mother burned his candle in the front window on Halloween. She scraped what remained of the candle off the window frame, wrapped the little wax puddle in beautiful gold foil, and mailed it to the ex-husband the following Christmas. Ever since then, the candles have assumed iconic status in the family. Every Christmas, Mary's mother picks up her candle and says, "Maybe when I die, you could light mine and put it on my coffin." "We'll never light them," said Mary. "Never, ever." Mary found a local welder to make her copper tree. He came to the house and measured their living room door early in December. "I won't be able to use copper," he said. "I'm going to use steel. But it'll be oxidized steel, so it'll be copper-colored. It'll look sort of, he was searching for the right word. "Dead," said Bert. That was the night when Mary told Bert she'd settled on scallops for Christmas dinner. "I'm going to poach them in saffron," she said, "so they'll look nice with a tree." And that was the moment that galvanized Bert. That was the moment Bert decided the time for action had come. Bert was standing in his driveway when lightning struck. Well, not literally lightning, but close to it. There was a flash and a loud clap, and Bert jumped back, his hands flying up to protect his head. And then, as he stood there, a giant set of fiberglass reindeer antlers fell out of the sky and planted themselves in the front lawn right beside him. Bert stared at the vibrating antlers, thinking how ironic it would have been, given his current situation, to have been taken out by a giant Christmas decoration. And then he looked up, and he spotted his neighbor, Dave, running down the sidewalk. Dave, with his face covered in soot and his eyebrows singed. "You'll never believe what just happened," said Dave. And it was suddenly obvious to Bert what had to happen. Mary needed to be distracted, or Christmas, as Bert knew and loved it, was going to be lost. And if Mary's family weren't going to show up and do the job, Bert needed someone else to take up the slack. Someone who rubbed up against his wife a bit, the way her sister did. Someone to preoccupy her. "Hey," said Bert. "Dave, how are you?" And that is why, 2 weeks later, at 2 o'clock on Christmas afternoon, Morley looked at her husband across the mess of their living room and said, if we're going to get to the Turlingtons on time, we better start getting ready right now.
That was the great and the wonderful Stuart MacLean, but this is just the first part of a 2-3-part series. You're going to hear, you just heard the first, and at the end you'll hear the second part. And I encourage you strongly to look for the third part online. So, like I said, he influenced a lot of Canadian singers. The CBC Canada was a showcase for Canadian artists, and he was certainly one of its champions. As such, he influenced a lot of the, I don't know if I can say success, but certainly confidence of a lot of Canadian singers and artists that I never heard of. One of them being the next one on the list, who is Reid Jamieson. He comes from Vancouver, and he has quite an interesting history of songs. He's got something like 11 records out, and he's just fantastic. And the Globe and Mail describes him as a gorgeous, sun-struck acoustic with an acoustic soul. Vocalically, he is a powerhouse, and he writes really beautiful music, this first song being an ode to the great Canadian storyteller Stuart MacLean. It's called Hey Big Kid.
I remember the first time I heard you on the radio. I started driving slow through tears of laughter and sympathy. You made the scenery seem more real to me. How could I have known that one day we would share this road? Making words and music together, bring it to the people through all kinds of weather. Hey, big kid, caught you playing with again. You let them spill across this country, and you made yourself a million friends. Hey, big kid, all your travels, will they never end? And if you're looking for a jukebox you can call your own, all you have to do is tune me in. And hey, kid, you just made yourself another friend. Hey, big kid, we caught you playing with your words again. Hey, big kid, I hope this story never ever ends.
You're listening to Graphite 94.9 FM in English Only with the Doctor. That was Reid Jamieson with an ode to, or an homage to, the great Stuart MacLean. And because I've heard a couple of songs. I never heard of him before. Actually, I was looking for information about Stuart MacLean, and he just kind of popped up in the radar. And I think he's just absolutely phenomenal. Another song that he wrote as an ode to a Canadian artist is Dear Leonard Cohen. And I thought from a lyrical perspective, it was just an absolutely phenomenal song that I want to share with you right now. This is Dear Leonard Cohen by Reid Jamieson.
Dear Leonard, I write you today my proposal in song. My struggle lies where you are strong. I've wrestled with words for so very long. Line after line, as each conversation was wrong. Pinned to the ground, silence won. Started and ended before I'd begun. I'll lend you the blue of my eye and a body still young. The voice of an angel, sweet sound from my guitar and tongue. If you lend me the lines of your years and the ease of your song, inside this bargain we'll both belong. Understand this is only a loan. While I'll be the skin to your bone, I long for sacred hymns of my own. Yes, I'd call to sing you the phone book, that old tired tone, yet onto the fire it's thrown. Were you the author, we'd still take her home. I'll lend you the blue of my eye and a body still young, the voice of an angel, sweet sound from my guitar and tongue. If you lend me the lines of your years and the ease of your song, inside this bargain we'll both belong. Should I kneel and praise the sun, climb your mountain, take a vow of none? Is that where your confidence comes from? Your holy audience of one. No, I've never believed in my soul, no poet my stories untold. I swallow the seeds of them whole while you're still late, and I really should let you go. You've helped me more than you know, using you as you did her, and that's how it goes. I'll lend you the blue of my eye and a body still young, the voice of an angel, sweet sound from my guitar and tongue. If you lend me the lines of your years and the ease of your song, inside this bargain we'll both belong. Dear Leonard, I write you today my proposal in song.
I find that really lovely. So that comes from Reed Jameson's album from 2016. It's called Dear Leonard, the Cohen Collection. So this is the first song on the album, and all the preceding songs are covers of Leonard Cohen, and he has such an interesting style, and he puts such an interesting twist to them. They are truly, it's almost like you're listening to a different song completely with those lovely lyrics of Leonard Cohen. So I encourage you fortement to go and take a look and see what he has. You'll find him online with his wife, that the band is called Reed Jameson, CVM, and the CVM is his wife and co-writer, Carolyn Victoria Mill. Another group called White Horse is also a wife and husband duo that was championed by Stuart McLean, and they were also on his Vinyl Cafe show. So I don't know if I told you this earlier, but Vinyl Cafe, Stuart McLean took Vinyl Cafe from 1998 to 2015 on the road. So when he was on the road, he'd do these stories and he'd storytell in front of an audience, and at the same time he'd bring a band in on occasion, and most of the time actually, where he'd showcase the band. This is one of the bands that were showcased, and this is a duo from, where are they from? Hamilton, Ontario. This is White Horse and I'm on Fire. They're doing a cover here of Bruce Springsteen, and it's just fantastic.
Hey, little girl, is your daddy home, or did he go and leave you all alone? I got a bad desire. Take you high. Oh,
Sometimes it's like someone took a knife, being edgy and dull, cut a 6-inch valley through the middle of my soul. At night I wake up and the sheets are soaking wet, and there's a freight train running through the middle of my head only. Oh, I'm on fire.
Found the original of this Bruce Springsteen song, I'm on Fire, very, very passionate, almost like lustful. And this was quite melancholic. I'm kind of interested in this change of emotional scenery in my head. On that similar note, I thought the melancholy kind of spoke to me. The next song on the list is Cuff the Duke. Now, Cuff the Duke is a band that started in 2001, and they're still playing today. They're considered an alternative country music band, and they got their name, apparently, their lead singer, Wing Petty, got their name from a t-shirt that he bought in a secondhand store. So this song here comes from their 2002 album, Life Stories of Minimum Wage, and it is called The Ballad of Poor John Henry. Here you go.
Thank you.
It'll be all right. It'll be all right. Everything will be okay. That's what I like to hear every single morning as I wake up, because I'm never sure. I wake up in the morning. Generally, my husband and my son think I'm crazy. I go outside without any shoes on, and I thank the universe for my existence. And I say, I profess how I'm connected to everything that is living, and I'm very, very, very grateful for that reality. It makes my son laugh, and I think it makes my husband feel uncomfortable, but that's okay, because it's not all about his comfort, is it? This next song on the list is by Jim Bryson. He was on the Vinyl Cafe, I'm not exactly sure what year, but if you want to look him up, you can find him singing the song Firewatch live on the Vinyl Cafe. That's not the one we're going to be listening to right now, though. We're going to listen to the song Cut Bait. Now, this song comes from his 2018 album, Tired of Waiting. And Jim Bryson is a National Folk Award nominee, and he debuted his career in the 2000s with the year 2000 with the album called The Occasional, which was also recognized as one of the top 10 albums in Americana UK of the same year. This is the song Cut Bait. If you like that kind of music, I'm going to strongly suggest that you take a look at his subscriptions on YouTube, because you can find him at Jim Bryson, B-R-Y-S-O-N, because I see that there's 1,700 views of this song from 5 years ago, but there's only 128 that are subscribed. So let's support Canadian musicians as Stuart McLean supported Canadian musicians. This next duo is a female duo from Ontario, I believe. Hold on, I forget where they come from. They come from, where do they come from? Yes, they did. They met in Scarborough, Ontario, and apparently they met at the high school, you know, band, when you learn music in high school. And they toured from 2008 to between 2008 and 2015 with The Vinyl Cafe and Stuart McLean. This is Dalla and their song, Karikavus. I can't pronounce it, but it's lovely.
I wish I was in Carrickfergus, only for nights in Ballygran. I would swim over the deepest ocean, the deepest ocean. But the sea is wide, and I can't swim over, nor have I the wings to fly. I wish I had, a handsome time spent so long ago. My boyhood friends and my own relations have all passed on now like melting snow. So I'll spend my
You're listening to Graphic 94.9 FM in English only with the doctor. So I wasn't too bad. They sang it for us. Carrickfergus. It is a village. It's an old village in the north of Ireland, if you're really interested in going there. Apparently it's rainy, and this is a beautiful, I'm looking on the internet right now, and it's got a lovely, lovely, humongous castle with, you know, fortified walls and big round tools, and it's just fantastic. The next song on the list is Matt Anderson. Well, there's two songs that they're coming back to back. Matt, one is by Matt Anderson and the other one is by Jill Barber. And why I picked these two is because I know that in, I think it was 2008, they also were on the Vinyl Cafe, but they were there together. So I think that's really interesting. Matt Anderson and Jill Barber have two very different styles of singing. Matt Anderson is very bluesy, 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 hardcore bluesy. And he's got this voice. This is something that's similar between the two of them. This voice that just resonates into your body as he sings is just fantastic. I've seen him doing covers that were just great and memorable, and then he's done his own original work that's also great and memorable. The only disadvantage is, if you're looking for Matt Anderson online, you will only find live concerts. I haven't seen one recorded, any kind of thing that where I can find my own personal abilities in searching things on the internet. And they're still fantastic. So this particular song is called A Quarter on the Ground, and it's from, I think it's a 2019 album, yes, Halfway Home by Morning, and it's just fantastic. Enjoy. Oh, there's a couple of seconds. Do-do-do-do-do. Let's sing together. Here we go.
Why can't you just pick up the telephone? Just need to hear you say hello. Things will never be the way they used to be. It's just so hard to let it go. Oh, 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 oh. Yes, we had some of the best of times. Even the worst was never all that bad. Wish we could talk just one last time. We've already had our chance. I keep that paper in my pocket. Your number down. I take it out and I think of you every time I see a quarter on the ground. Whoa, 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 your picture in the hallway, and a wooden frame upon the wall. Often I stop just to remember how good it felt when you were called. Whoa, 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 whoa. The lines on the page, you're faded. The words are getting harder to read. I know what it says by heart. I keep it to keep you with me. I keep that paper in my pocket. Your number down. I take it out and I think of you every time I see a quarter on the ground. Oh, 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 every time I see a quarter on the ground. Oh,
geez Louise, he's got an amazing voice. I just love it. So just as a fun fact to know anything about Matt Anderson, he is a guitarist and he's a blues writer, I would say. And he comes from New Brunswick, which is interesting because there's not a lot of singers and artists that I have heard of on a regular basis, even in the Canadian context when I was there, that were from that area. Not to say that they're not talented. I'm just saying that they don't seem to get that far. And that says something to, that speaks a little bit to what I really enjoyed about Canadian CBC radio is because they really did make huge effort on allowing all of the provinces to be and all of the artists to be showcased and to be championed and to be recognized. And I think that that's fantastic. There was another radio station from Alberta. It was CKUA that also made a lot of effort to do that for Albertan artists. And I think that that was just fantastic. The next song on the list is by Jill Barber. And like I said, that they toured, Matt Anderson and Jill Barber, apparently they toured with Stuart McLean in the Vinyl Cafe together. And this song here is called Tous Mes Rêves. I like to do try to do at least one French song. I think she has got a lovely French voice, and it's not the only thing she does in French. She wrote this whole album called Chanson, and it's also fantastic. So if you're interested in Jill Barber, I will suggest you listen to Chanson and any other one of her albums. This is Tous Mes Rêves from her 2010 album, Tous Mes Rêves, Jill Barber.
Auparavant, je priais nuit et jour que j'aurais de la chance de tomber en amour. Mais qu'est-ce que je fais quand mes rêves sont devenus vrais? Auparavant, je rêvais sous les cieux, mais maintenant, je te regarde dans les yeux. C'est ce que je fais, car mes rêves sont devenus vrais. La lune pleine garde son haleine. Si on t'envoyait pour que je te dise je t'aime. Chaque jour et chaque nuit, autant éveillé qu'endormi, c'est ce que je fais, car mes rêves sont devenus vrais. Voilà ce que je fais, car mes rêves sont devenus.
That was Jill Barber with Tous Mes Rêves from her 2010 album, Tous Mes Rêves. Now, I thought I'd bring you into another Jill Barber song because I do have a little bit of time and I think that she's just fantastic. This comes from her 2011 album, Mischievous Moon, and it's Be My Man.
I promise to be good and do everything that I should and be the best woman that I can. Will you promise? be my man. If I swear all my love to you, if I swear always to be true, to be the one that you know will understand, will you promise to be my man? This little piece of heaven above. Where did you get the nerve? Are you trying to spoil me with your love?
Just spoil me.
If I promise to be good and do everything, everything that I should, you could make me the happiest woman in the land if you promise to hold me tight, if you promise to treat me right, if you promise be my man, be my man.
If there was anything I could choose my voice to do when I sing, is to be able to get to her point of vocalics when she uses her vowels and how it comes out of her diaphragm. It's just fantastic. It doesn't sound like she ever gets tired when she sings. Now, I'm not an experienced singer, so I know nothing about it. But I do like to keep a tune. And I know that one of the things that bother me the most is when I sing a song like this, and when I sing it like I love it, my voice box gets all scratchy because I'm obviously not using the right technique. So if ever I learn how to sing like a proper human being or a better singer, that'd be something that I would wish, is to be able to, you know, just let the air flow through it. On that last note, I don't know if you remember, but I don't know if you started with this program or you're just coming in. So we started the program with a 7 or 8 minute part of a story by Stuart MacLean called Christmas at the Turlingtons. And this is the second part that we're going to listen to. So if you remember, what was happening is that the Turlingtons were creating this amazing Christmas experience based on a theme, which was cinnamon. And now their neighbors, Dave and Morley, are about to go to their house. I'm going to bid you goodbye. I wish you a fantastic evening, a safe drive, and a wonderful weekend filled with love and affection. And for those Americans that are in Compiègne right now, enjoy your weekend and your family. And apparently you make, what is it, sweet potato with marshmallows. I find that very sweet in my ideas. I've tasted it once and it was very, very sweet. So enjoy that if that's what you love. There you go. The doctor is leaving the house and I leave you with part two of three parts. You have to look the third part up online, of Stuart MacLean's Christmas at the Turlingtons.
Dave was standing by the couch in his pajamas, knee-deep in wrapping paper. He was holding Morley's present. It looked like it had been wrapped by a small animal with no opposable thumbs. "This is for you," he said, holding the package out. And he kicked his way across the room towards Morley as if it was an October afternoon and he was kicking his way through a leaf-strewn park. "I love you," he said. Sam, 12 years old, and crawling through the paper toward the back of the tree like a caver, stopped dead and looked over his shoulders at his parents, and he said, will you two please stop talking like that in front of me? It's inappropriate. At 2 o'clock in the afternoon at Dave's house, Christmas was still in full swing. Two doors down the street, however, at Christmas Central, two doors down the street at the Turlington's house, there was very little evidence that Christmas had even happened. The Turlington twins had already taken their presents back to their rooms, and they'd put things away in their drawers and cupboards. And while Sam dove under another pile of paper as if he were snorkeling, the Turlington twins, dressed in their matching Christmas sweaters, were sitting at the dining room table writing out their thank you cards. 21-year-old Adam Turlington was sitting on the sofa, carefully folding wrapping paper and sorting it into two neatly labeled boxes, one marked recycle, the other marked reuse. Mary Turlington was vacuuming in a pair of gold kitten heel shoes. And soon these two different cultures were going to be brought under the same roof. Dave and Morley and Sam and Stephanie were heading up the Turlington's walk. And now, as they stood on the Turlington stoop, Morley turned and she took Dave's arm at the elbow and she said, best behavior. Very best, said Dave, nodding earnestly. And he meant it. They were both thinking of other dinners at the Turlingtons, the competitive strain, the abrasive political discussions. Dave took a deep breath. Very best, he said again. And then Dave reached out and he rang the Turlington's bell. Mary opened the door and stared at Dave, and there was an uncomfortable beat before anyone said anything. Mary in a long black evening gown, gold earrings, her hair a strangely artificial shade of orange. Her hair sprayed and pulled tightly back into a bun. Mary standing there like she was expecting the queen and finding a man from the stables instead. Mary in her formal dress and Dave in his cords and a flannel shirt. If you could have seen inside of them, you could have watched both of their hearts sinking, both of them thinking, how did I get myself into this? And before either of them had time for a second thought, Dave saw Mary Turlington's Christmas tree for the first time. It had a steel trunk and steel branches and steel needles and steel decorations. And Dave, who had been expecting greenery when he glanced into the living room, blinked. To Dave, the tree looked rusty. The tree looked sharp, like some kind of giant, corroded medieval weapon, or a bombed-out electrical tower left rotting in the fields of some war-torn country. And those are the thoughts that were tumbling through Dave's mind as he stood in the hall with his mouth hanging open. And the very first words that came out of his mouth were not, Happy Christmas, Mary, or Mary, you look wonderful. The first words out of Dave's mouth were, My God. What happened to your tree? Morley saw Mary's jaw twitch and thought she heard a faraway whoosh. It was the sound of an evening of merriment being sucked out of the house. Dave glanced helplessly at Morley. I'm trying, his expression seemed to say. Morley stared back. Try harder. And then Bert was ushering everyone into the living room, posing them around the rusting tree, chatting with forced cheeriness. He pulled out his new digital camera. Everyone smile, said Bert, hopefully. And Dave did try harder. In an effort to show Mary that he appreciated her hospitality, Dave sunk his hand into a bowl of gourmet snack mix that was on the hall table. As soon as he popped the stuff into his mouth, he knew he had a problem. He glanced down at the bowl. There were dried cranberries in there, and what looked like bits of cinnamon stick. But what he thought were tiny potato chips were now looking suspiciously like the stuff you might use at the bottom of a hamster cage. Dave's teeth grinded away at what he now realized were cedar shavings. And it dawned on him that he was eating Mary's Christmas potpourri. When he looked up to see if anyone had noticed, he saw Mary staring at him from the other side of the living room. So instead of spitting into his hand, which is what he wanted to do, Dave smiled gamely and swallowed. Bert handed Morley a glass of wine and reached for his camera. "Hold it there, Dave," said Bert.